they said that more and more buyers are trying to get that B2C experience in a B2B world. And the fascinating number that they found, though, was like 23% of people who do go through a self-help process usually have some kind of buyer remorse, because even though they could buy it themselves, they realize there's a part here where I still want to get some technical guidance, guide them and give them an opportunity to have an experience so that they can be able to make the best decision so they don't have to buy remorse.
Welcome to Aligned, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. On today's episode of Aligned, Sean and guest Donald Kelly, the sales evangelist, discuss the importance of both private and public commitment in the marketing and sales process. When sales and marketing teams work together, your company will see a 36% higher customer retention rate and a 38% higher win rate. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Hello, welcome to Aligned. I'm your host, Sean Doyle, with the ever-present Donald C. Kelly. Thank you, Donald, for joining us for one more episode.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited to be here, man. Thanks so much for having me again, Sean.
Oh, you're welcome. Always learn a lot from you. You know, Donald, I was reading recently that when sales and marketing teams work together, and if you don't know, Donald is the consummate sales guy, I'm the consummate marketing guy. When we see those teams work together, the companies will see a 36% higher customer retention rate and a 38% higher win rate. I think that's worth pursuing. You in on that?
I'm in on that. And I think we all would like to see that higher win rate, higher opportunities.
Why wouldn't you? Right. You know? but there's some really interesting things, because today's conversation is really going to center around one best practice around commitment and what the data says, what the science says, that both of these data points are impacted very early to kind of middle of the funnel, very early in that decision-making process. And we're after, we've got a lead, we might have met with them. Let's give some context to this. So, you know, that idea of somebody is in the active decision-making phase, but there's some things that have to happen in a sequential order to get these wins that impact not only your close rate, but your lifetime value, that high customer retention. So Aligned, as you know, is the podcast for C-suite executives who are looking for practical, implementable, repeatable insights, practical things that help break through barriers and continually improve your company's sales and marketing performance. So as we look at that and how to do that, I'm reminded, Donald, you live in a part of the country that deals with hurricanes frequently.
You know, it's South Florida.
You know, if you don't know, if you're not living in that world, June is kind of the beginning of hurricane season. And somewhere around there, you start hearing all the alerts and Insta posts and saying, hey, it's time to, I don't know why you guys all buy bread and water, but everybody goes and buys bread and water and buy, I guess you buy plywood and duct tape for windows. I don't know what all you have to do. But I know that the threat, it's early, right? Where it's pre-warning, but how many people actually go out and do anything?
No, not a lot. I mean, even the state of Florida, they started, the governor started a while back doing a couple governors ago now, but they do early purchasing discounts. So if you were to go out and buy like a generator, you is no tax on that, and incentivizing people to go in and start. But some people just don't.
Because people are, it's because it's so far out, right? They're just not that interested in it. I'm not going to buy batteries yet. I'll just wait. But then, you know, you get that forecast and you start going, hey, 7 days from now, it's going to be big. Then all of a sudden, there's a big rush to go buy these things, buy the batteries, buy the flashlights, get a radio, maybe see if you can rush over to Home Depot and get a generator. And then, of course, they're gone and it's late. What I was thinking about was hurricanes are a lot like sales, because in sales and marketing, we see the hurricane coming way before it's happening, way before the buyer even thinks about or is willing to take action. So we're out there screaming, jumping up and down, going, it's coming. And we're frustrated because the buyers don't see it yet. I think that's it's an incredible parallel that buyers don't see the problems that we do. Well, why do we see problems? Because we do it all the time. We're motivated to do it. Well, we see a repeatable pattern. And I think that points to kind of what's at stake. So what is at stake? So we know that lots of businesses lose deals to no decisions, right? They get to the point of contemplating and thinking about it, and they just don't move forward. So one of the recent studies from HBR that we read, in fact, you were mentioning this author before we started recording, that 2.5 million recorded sales calls, both transactional and complex sales calls, that about 40 to 60% of those deals ended up lost to people who expressed intent but failed to act. Kind of like that hurricane. I expressed intent. Yeah, I should go. I should have batteries, but I failed to act. You know? Yeah. So I think that it's precise. So I think we can tell you today how to use your team, the same team you have now, the same resources you have. I kind of think that's Fitzmartin's superpower. That's where I work. And we can help you dive through that. So where in the buyer's journey are we specifically? We are at the point where somebody is preparing and they've moved through that contemplating phase. They've been thinking about the past and seeking information when they're contemplating. Now they're preparing. They have intent to take action. And that's the data that we just referred to from the Harvard Business Review. People are intending to take intent. The science says that somebody's going to take intent typically within 6 months. And if you're saying, Donald, if you're telling me you're going to quit smoking, I don't think Donald's a smoker, but if you told me you're going to quit smoking in 2 years, I'm going to say, you're not really thinking about that. Yeah. The science says that we don't think that far out. We don't make those decisions. So those of you who have complex B2B decision-making processes and maybe contracts that are 2, 3, 4 years, you're saying, yeah, but people do start making decisions. I would challenge that the science, even in a 3-year cycle, a contractual cycle, people don't really make the final decisions until they're about 6 months out. And you can argue it, but the signal to me is, when are the decision makers, the highest value executives, the top level on the C-suite, are they involved a year out from the decision? I'd challenge they're probably not. There may be exploratory work going on a year out or 2 years out, but not that top level work. So when you're in that next phase, you're in that preparation phase, when you're intending to take action in the next 6 months, you really start to delve into specifics of need. As a salesperson, we're seeing a shift in the prospect, meaning they're tending to look forward now instead of looking back at the problem. They're looking at a future state. What might that be like? They're setting goals, they're developing detailed plans. So in essence, they're saying, you know, I'm interested in this, Donald. I'm not ready quite yet, but I'm interested in it. So that is the first place where a commitment is a powerful best practice based on this centricity model. So as a real quick reminder, centricity is simply the application of behavioral science to the processes and best practices needed to have very optimized marketing and sales teams, budgets, and efficient wins. So what we want to do is look at centricity as a behavioral stage, cycles through the journey, the behavioral stages, and say, okay, it's a pipeline in essence. It's the way a buyer buys. Donald, yeah, how many pipelines have you seen over there?
Well, I've seen quite a few over my years, not only with the companies that I've worked with my own, but clients.
And for the most part, they all are just what? Indications of how far somebody is down the journey of making a purchase, right?
Yeah. So that, whether it's discovery or whatnot, whatever they have on their side.
Yeah. So that's not a big aha for anybody, right? A pipeline. The aha moment for centricity is the way we focus our intent is around the stages of the pipeline, around the buckets in each stage, or do we focus on the buyer's needs during that journey? And the answer of centricity is you should always be centered on the user, on the buyer. So the buyer's needs are different from the beginning when you need to raise consciousness, you need to use tools like best practices like social liberation, then you move into other effective tools like emotional arousal, rational reevaluation. But the aha is then where we are now when you're preparing to take action. There's only two techniques that are introduced that are new and effective here, and that's helping relationships, which we're going to record another episode on, and then private and public commitment. So when you're in the preparatory stage, private commitment is what makes sense. It's what's effective. So Centricity goes on to share at the closing table, there's things like countering, environmental controls, rewards that are effective. So there's 9 best practices, and the aha moment of behavioral science is also those 9 best practices are effective at only certain points of the pipeline. So let's just boil it down very simply. Early in effectiveness, tools like consciousness raising, which is different than awareness, is effective. And that's what most advertising agencies focus on. Social liberation is a tool you might call a technique, a testimonial. That's an effective tool early. But those tools are not your go-to plays at the closing table. So we've got to elevate our marketing and sales sophistication and understanding to understand the buyer's needs are different as they go through the process of change. And the marketing and sales teams, and I would add in customer service and rev ops if you have a technology team, they have to understand how that alignment works to the buyer's needs at each step. So middle of the funnel, we're going to talk about commitment. And every buyer has to make a commitment. First, a private one, and then a public one. The data does
Why
not
is that
show
so critical?
The order, the sequence? Because
why do you feel that's so critical for the buyer to make that internal, that personal private one and then the public?
So it's a great question, the why. Why is that important? So first of all, preparation as a stage in change is a cornerstone upon which effective action is built. So you notice at the top of the show, we were talking about retention rates. If you don't take the time to properly prepare, and then you go ahead and buy, you're very likely to churn. So it's important to make a private commitment and before a public commitment, partially because you as a seller, you want to make sure this person has actually thoroughly considered. So as sales teams, Donald, have you ever been told the best advice for a salesperson is to slow down?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not when you're trying to, hit the end of the month and nail it. But a good salesman knows when to slow down. So what's happening when a salesman has that intuitive sense, what they're feeling is there's a person that needs to further consider and go through the preparation process before they make a public commitment, which might be presenting to an executive team. It might be signing a contract. It might be other expressions that are not private. So in the preparation stage, what's critical to understand is there's really 2 types of behaviors happening. So there's the buyer is reevaluating themselves as well as their problem. So often we see in marketing people and in sales, we're so focused on our thing that we sell. We love the thing, whatever the product is, the solution, the service. But we don't have a good plan to help the person change. We don't acknowledge that there's a personal change going on. And to that, you might argue, but we're working with big companies. It's not a personal decision. Well, of course, it's a personal decision because there's somebody in charge of using the service that you sell or implementing the product that you're, or the large CapEx decision or the other people are involved, and businesses don't make decisions. People make decisions, right? So of course, there's a personal change going on. So if all we're focused on is here's the product, here's the evaluation, here's the resources, here's the ROI in the future, and we're leaving out the fact that the person's having to go through change and they are reevaluating themselves. And that's why we say things like in this stage, the earlier stage, the preparation stage, where we are now, middle of the funnel, people begin to look toward the future and what that might look for themselves and less at the past. So if we continually hammer on past state, we're going to fix this problem, we're going to fix this problem, we're going to fix this problem, that's great, but it's incomplete. So a technique to implement this practice is always have tools that allow you to look forward. And the majority of your information should be forward-looking at this time versus when you are contemplating, you really want to balance. You want to go, here's the bad behavior, here's the old model, and here's the new, and compare and contrast. Simply said, imagine a before and after ad. That's a before and after is a technique that's effective at contemplating, right? Oh, I can see visually what it looks like now and what a future state might look like. Now, when we're preparing, in this technique, we want to look at the future. We're trying to drive future behavior and equip people both personally and the fixing the problem. So what would a future state look like? We're willing to look forward. I feel like I'm lecturing a little bit, but
keep going. That's good. Finish the point. Finish the point before we jump in.
So why is this important? Why is private and public commitments important? So there's always going to be two components when you're preparing. You're always going to be reevaluating yourself, maybe the decision you made, maybe the risks. We refer often to pain points, and you personally might have risk for your job. You might have opportunity to improve your job. You might have professional advancement. None of that had to do with the product or the service that you're selling. That all had to do with me as a person and what I might be doing. So the second part of that is the problem, right? I can't just solve, if I'm buying a large CapEx decision and I'm doing it because I'll get a promotion, well, that's a bad decision. If I'm doing it because I might get a promotion because I fixed the major problem that the business has, or a major problem, and there's ROI and measurable change happens and I'm attributed to it, then that's a personal and a problem solved. So there's just two components. So as we're developing private commitments, I think first we've got to understand that the buyer is going to make a private commitment to your solution before they're going to take it to other influencers and decision makers. So often we've been taught, and maybe even your deal sheet says, who's the decision maker? Who are the influencers? And you're structuring your CRM to record all this. That might be the wrong question to ask, because I'm not ready to tell you who the other decision makers are. I don't want to reveal that. All right. So I don't know. I'm going on. We'll talk about public in a second, but you know, you just got to understand that by definition, commitment is about somebody who's already aware of their problem. They haven't committed to fixing the problem yet, certainly not even with your solution. And they're going to go through these two stages, this private stage and then a public stage.
Yeah. And I think it's overlooked oftentimes by salespeople, but I can tell you, let's speak from personal experience by myself. I'm in the past where the private commitment, I look past it, like I assume. And I think that's one of the hardest, like, you know, some people say you assume the sale. I think it's one of the silliest components, because every time I've assumed, it doesn't necessarily work out in my favor or in that, you know, in the best interest of the deal. But what I recommend is you assure that sale. And in that same instance, when it comes towards that personal commitment, how can we, you know, help the prospect to assure or to verify that, you know, to make that commitment and to verify that they are making that commitment, rather than saying, yeah, Sean is interested. You know, I can feel that he's interested. Like, don't just feel it. Get that commitment made.
Why does proper sales and marketing alignment result in a 32% average lift in revenue? Because a unified company centered around its prospects can't help but thrive. Fitzmartin's Sales and Marketing Alignment Program will analyze your current sales and marketing structure to deliver a plan based on the needs of your prospects, bringing you increased revenue, expansion opportunities, and above all, a unified front when communicating with prospects. To set your company up for success, visit fitzmartin.com/solutions. Again, that's fitzmartin.com/solutions to discover how to unify your sales and marketing for the best results.
Well, and the behavioral science that we lean our advice on, it tells us that in the private commitment phase, you're going to try things on. You're going to see what it feels like and looks like. You might do a trial. And then as a salesperson, you're motivated to close, right? So you see this trying on of a new suit of clothing and you're going, man, I'm getting this deal. Well, it might be that the person's trying on the new suit of clothing just to see if the color looks good.
Yeah.
They may have decided to change their clothing, but not that suit. So you go in for the clothes, and the key here is the interest is wrong, right? When you when you try to close the deal, when you do the trial close too soon, then what you're signaling to a buyer is, hey, this is really about me achieving my goals, not you achieving your goals. So you put on that suit of clothes and you go, I just don't look that good in blue. Oh, okay. That's fine. But how was the cut? How was the feel? How did the Do you like the wide lapel or the narrow lapel? What do you, I mean, there's so many things you can help the person think through, but it's got to be about them, right? So like the whole slow down, I'd say marketing and sales both need to have systems in place to understand what the buyer's needs are and that private commitment. You're not going for the deal. You're helping them evaluate how that they are going to be served personally.
One of my clients that I do some coaching work with, I always brag about him. He's like the poster child, but he is now one of the top performers in this organization and owner's club and everything. And one of the things that he does, especially at this part of the process, is asking the buyer, how will this benefit you? How would this help you in your department? What is it going to do for you? And it's fascinating when, you know, sometimes I feel sellers don't ask that because they feel like it's going to be too intrusive. But by asking that question, like, man, it's golden. It's magic. Because at that point, we are able to really delve deep into what matters most to them. And then from there, obviously, that can help the deal progress further. And now it's almost given that other, you know, that other level of like conviction behind a project. Because again, if we assume that they know what they're supposed to do or what benefit is going to happen, there's just something about when a human being vocalizes that it just makes a difference. So let's say, for instance, if it's a CRM, and by me getting the CRM, it's going to make my life so much easier. It's going to help my team to perform better. And it's going to, you know, if it does work, I'm going to look towards the person that saved us because our CRM has been glitchy for years. You know, no one has done anything. So like, those things, it's like, bro, that's good data, great insight. And it's the commit. Now you can make the commitment for, you can help them make it a commitment, whether it's to say, what are they willing to do next? Whether that's to get access to certain things or, you know, to prep for the next level or whatnot. But it's them validating, agreeing, sharing their emotions behind it, and also committing to doing something else.
Yeah, that's incredible insight. I mean, I'll just quote the book Changing for Good. That's the source of, mm-hmm. of this data. And that's the change is threatening and anxiety brings with it avoidance and delay, right? So that's normal. So now wait a second, you're talking about anxiety? Yeah, I am, because people make decisions. Well, yeah, but my widget, you know, increases productivity and costs less per unit. And there's anxiety to change. So if you can shift, and that's the flip, right? If you quit talking about your widget increases performance and is cheaper and talk about the person and the company and the decision makers and understand their needs, you can flip your conversation. You still have to share what your widget does. That's fine. Share that. But you've got to understand there's anxiety that comes with change and there's sometimes threatening things, right? We've been doing it this way for 20 years. Okay. That's an expression of anxiety about change, right?
Yeah.
So that tells me that I don't care about your widget. You have not yet dealt with what I am going to deal with, whether it's on the line, manufacturing it, or the guy in charge of production, or the guy in charge of procurement, or whatever. And we all will take anxiety and we'll use anxiety to make it an excuse to wait. I'm just going to wait till a better time. You know, Donald, I'd love to buy your thing, but we're going to need to wait till another time. You've heard that, it's not a good time for the company. But so, you know, anxiety makes people hide their actions. Why? Yeah. Why would anxiety make us hide our actions? Well, I don't want to look dumb. I mean, ultimately, right? My personal pain is a fear of looking foolish. So if I've got anxiety about change, the easiest thing for me to do is stiff arm the salesman or to ignore the marketing. That's an easy thing. Now, there's also some techniques that we can overcome this with. We're not hopeless here. We're not helpless here. I think one of the most powerful techniques that I've learned recently, actually, from a system called Same Side Selling, Ian Altman. Mm-hmm.
Great stuff.
Yeah, it is good stuff. Because you know why? Same side. What's that? His name means I'm going to be on the side of the buyer. I'm going to flip. My needs are secondary to the needs of the buyer. And so he teaches what's called a concise business case. And in this concise business case, it's kind of a private commitment. So I've met with Donald C. Kelly and I've learned what he needs that I'm selling. And I'm going to go back home and I'm going to write an email that's very tight. Donald, I understand you're in pursuit of $20 million. I understand that You know, you list the things, and that if you could find a way to elevate your sales in an exponential and XYZ, and you know, you just write in a very tight manner a business case, not for what you're going to do, but for what Donald needs to get done. And you send that back. I mean, that's a private commitment. Donald, did I understand this correctly? This is what's important to you? You know, because this is all about you, right? This is not about me. It's about you. Have you ever used any kind of techniques like that, that concise business case?
Oh, for sure. I mean, as you're doing that, I'm putting some notes down here. And there, I mean, in our training program, we use this a lot. Again, go back to the idea of assuring the sale. And a way I like to think of it is the salespeople, and I think we glossed on this one of our last conversation. As a sale, like for instance, you're an expert at selling marketing services, like an expert because you've been doing it for so long, you know how to do it. But as a buyer, the last time I bought marketing services, maybe 3-4 years ago, I don't buy this on a day-to-day basis. But what happens when you are able to dictate, create that business case, it just validates, it makes it real, and it helps me to see that you're a professional and you teach me how to purchase it. You teach me how to go through it. Because it's, again, the same side. It's not like Donald's trying to win the deal here. It's, I want to help you to make a decision that's going to be in your best interest, for which you would compensate me if it works, right? So now it's that same side idea helps me to assure the sale, because when you use that business case with that prospect, the lights are out. It is totally, totally like, you know, a home run for the most part, because now I literally have something I can take back internally to the camp and say, guys, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. And I know we have an example I want to share with Carter Morrison. This lines perfectly with it. Can I share that right now?
Let's go.
Is more for the, I know it's on the other side, the public commitment, but Carter came to us and Rick was a champion, and then we needed the executive buy-in. So Rick was the, he was over purchasing, and but he and I had communication before. He knew the problem. He's heard the grumblings going on in the district. And then he said, all right, Donald, we need to, now it's time for us to move forward. So we started having a conversation, initial details. Then we got Carter, the executive buyer, to come in. And when Carter came in, he came in with that executive mindset. And this is the first time I learned this principle, Sean. I was assuming the sale. This is how we've done it before. Everyone knows this is how you buy software. But he said, you know what? When we get to the board, Donald, as the executive, I need to have that business case. I need you to go back and I need you to go do some groundwork. And I was like, oh man, this means it's not going to go through. We have to go back and do all this work. But he was already committed because we know that we're all on the same side. So I went to each department and I found out from them even more in detail. They made that personal commitment, which helped to make the group commitment, that public commitment. We went back to each department and they shared, this is a problem we're having. This is how we see that it's going to fix our organization. This is the type of result we imagine is going to happen. And we created a business case with each department, potential outcomes. And then we put this all together. When it came to the executive buyer, Carter is like, this makes total sense. If we don't do this, this is totally silly. So when he brought this to the board and the board was able, and as he's going to make this, you know, public commitment to the, you know, with the board, the board saw it. The business case made sense. It showed that we're all on the same page, me, him, and the different departments. It was a home run. It literally came down to us creating that business case together to helping them to see what the process is going to be and to see how this is impacting them and to see the result that they can have. It just made so much sense. And many salespeople don't do it because it just like young Donald there, I was thinking it's a lot of work. I just want the money, man. I was hungry for that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you're supposed to want the money. You're a salesman. you know, a good marketer wants the money too. We want the clothes. So I can tell the opposite story. I can tell the story of dumb sales. We did not use a concise business case. We did not teach the buyer how to buy in our industry, because you make such an incredibly good point there. And it's, I'm listening to you going, oh, I need to remember that, because you're right. People don't buy our stuff all the time. So I actually did one thing right. I took the time to explain to them, here's how people, it was a website. It was an enterprise manufacturing business, national company, I think 8 locations. They wanted to change their 2-market website. They wanted to change some verticals to go to market verticals, and then they did geographically based websites. So it was a complex deal, enterprise deal, big win. we brought in, it would have been a big win if I would have done my job. So I did the right thing. I taught them, hey, here's your current vendor. And on the pyramid of types of vendors there are in our industry, there's the bottom of the pyramid is this to-do kind of level group. The way they make money, and I actually said, I'm saying this to the prospect, right? The way this group makes money is they get you in a recurring revenue scheme. So they'll give you the front end, whatever quote they give you to redo all these websites, it's going to be really low because the way they want to make money on you is $500 a month per 10 websites. And that's how they're going to make a living. The next level up in our industry, we would call enhanced. And that company is going to say, what are your business objectives? We'll build you the websites. We're not worried about recurring fees. In fact, we'll recommend technologies with the lowest recurring fees that are solid technologies, but we're going to enhance. We're going to look at what your business strategy is and build websites that will be effective sales tools. And then the top of the pyramid would be something that didn't even really matter in this situation. It would be a, how do we fix sales? And this business actually had already hired us as a consultancy to come in and say, how do we achieve X million dollars of sales in Y years? And we gave them a plan. So I knew these people and they were ready to do the website component. So I explained the pyramid. They even said, the CEO and the SVP of sales said, that makes so much sense. We didn't know that's how your business works. Great. Mm. So we gave our quote. We gave it at the enhanced level, if not the strategic top of the pyramid level. And we lost the deal to a low price provider. And I'm like, what did we do? Because they even said they understood what we did. So I don't, either they A, didn't understand, but I think this is what happened. I didn't communicate two ways. One, to the prospect. I didn't say, I explained how our industry worked and I thought they would interpret then to the right decision. I didn't say, hey, what do y'all want? Mm-hmm. They would have said, you know, we're happy with that low quality convert. They would have said it. We just want to convert our websites. Make minimal. I mean, they would not. I mean, in my head, I'm like, well, why wouldn't you pursue the multi-million dollar effort that we're going to help you with? Why in the world would you just buy a conversion from one old website that was ineffective to a new website that's ineffective? I mean, that makes no sense to me, but there's a reason. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to get into the reasons why, but there was a business reason to do it. But I didn't ask the question. I did this great job of educating how they work, but I didn't ask the question of what they wanted to buy. So I came in with the top of the pyramid price, which looked astronomical compared to what the low bottom of the pyramid provider who's doing the work right now, not me. Now there's opportunity in the future. You know, what they'll eventually discover is, you know what, we're not really in pursuit of this multi-million dollar goal we had. I need to call Fitzmartin again because I think they knew how to do that. You know, and that's fine. I mean, I'm a patient man, so it's fine. But it's just the thing is, I did two things wrong. I didn't communicate out to the client clearly because I didn't have a tool. I didn't have a structure to do that where I understood what to do. Marketing had not equipped me as a salesperson to say, hey, here's the pyramid of our industry. Here's how selling works. Here's how buyers work. That's a great way marketing can support sales at this middle of the funnel stage. Vice versa. I didn't communicate internally to my team because I didn't have the tool. I didn't ask the question. I didn't have the training. I didn't communicate internally to the team. Here's how I need you to price it. So to make the story worse, we probably spent $10,000 of resources internally mapping out this enterprise deal. So fail, fail, fail. But it's just another good. So the concise business case, let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's simply an email. It simply points to pain points. Here's the financial goal. Here's the strategic goal. Here's the personal goal. It's short. It's simple. And it should ask a validation question. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is this to the business? Because it might be a really big pain point for this person. But if you ask the validation question, how important is it to you versus how important is it to the enterprise? Well, to me, it's really important. To the enterprise, it's a 2. It's not even on the radar. There's no way we'll get funding this year. Well, as a salesperson, would it not be better to know that before you go into any additional work? Great. I'll follow up with you in a year. I don't know. but yeah, it's just, why would I, if the person if it's not important to the enterprise, because enterprises have limited resources and they have to direct those resources, if it's not important to the resource, if the resource is not important, your solution is not important to the enterprise, pushing you to take me as a provider into the executive team, all I'm saying is, I really don't care about you as a person and how dumb you're going to look. What I care about is closing my deal, and I'm going to force it. So it just all has to do with what you care about. So the validation question is another important. So it's just such a better way to set up a conversation to understand. It's a technique that helps a private commitment person say, yeah, you understand the need. Mm-hmm. You understand the priority. We're on one page, or they can correct you. I haven't asked you to buy anything. I'm just asking if I understand you correctly. This is about you. And it's an incredibly effective technique. Marketing and sales should be aligned. And RevOps, you should be supporting that with technology.
Amen to that.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.